This is Jean McMillan. This is File 71. Today's date is February 23rd, 2014. I am interviewing Jane Burgess Fitting at her home, Forest Salmon Kill Road, Salisbury, Connecticut. She is going to talk about the White Hart, Harney T, the Ragamont, the Holly Williams House, the Holly Williams Summer Camp, the Historic Commission, and anything else she wants to add. What is your full name?
Jane Burgess Fitting.
And your birth date?
May 6, 1958.
And your birthplace?
Stamford, Connecticut.
Your parents' names?
Henry Whitfield Burgess and Lou Voorhees Burgess.
Do you have siblings?
I have three sisters.
And their names?
Sarah, Margaret, and Carol.
Is Carol spelled with an E?
No.
Didn't think so. Educational background.
How far back?
Well, we'll start with 1 year at Salisbury Central.
I didn't go to Salisbury Central. I had 1 year at Housatonic Valley Regional High School.
Okay.
Then I had 2 years at Hotchkiss when mm-hmm. they first took girls. Then I went to Wellesley College. Then I went to the hotel school at Cornell. Mm-hmm. Then my most recent education is the library school at the University at Albany.
Well done. Very well done. And how did you come to this area?
My family moved here in 1973.
And your father had his own business?
Yes, he was a lawyer.
What was his field of expertise in the lawyer trade?
Taxes and estates. He did some other things too, depending on what his clients needed, but mm-hmm. that was his forte.
Tell me about the White Hart. When did you start there?
I started working at the White Hart when I was between my sophomore and junior years of college.
About 1978?
Yes, or 9, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. 1978. And my sister and I, Sarah and I, applied for jobs there. And we both were hired to work in the country store mm-hmm. and to be breakfast waitresses.
Ah, this must have been when the country store was, as you faced the White Hart on the left as you
yes.
came in?
Yes, mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. And that country store was really interesting because it was the country store that had been on exhibit at the World's Fair in New York.
Ah!
In the early 1960s. So,
it was noted.
Yeah. The owners of the White Hart bought that and put it in the inn.
Who were the owners of the White Hart at the time you were working there?
I believe it was Reese Harris, Don Warner, and I think the Harneys had a small share also.
Okay.
I don't know if there were any other owners.
And did John Harney run as a manager of the hotel at that time?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It was a wild and crazy place.
I'll bet. Because I think you told me there was a 24-hour desk at the White Hart. Mm-hmm. It was used as dispatch for the ambulance.
And the fire.
And the fire.
Okay. And there were a lot of burglar alarms that went off there. So we also called the police and security companies, if need be. That didn't happen very often. But the ambulance and the fire did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You and your husband managed the White Hart for a while?
We did in the 1980s, 86 and 87.
How had it changed between the time you were working there as a breakfast waitress and when you and Peter were managing it?
Well, it had gone through hard times. It was sold to a pair of brothers who, it turned out, were part of the Bank of America scandal.
Oh, dear.
And they changed it a lot. They got rid of the country store and tried to turn it into an elite clubhouse atmosphere, which
didn't fly.
No, did not. So they went bankrupt, and then the White Hart was empty for a little while, and then a racer from Puerto Rico and his attorney bought it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
My word.
Basil, I can't remember his last name. Basil was the racer.
Okay.
And Herb Wolfert was the attorney. And we worked for them. And the day after they hired us, they declared bankruptcy.
Oh, great. Oh, so great.
Yes.
When you and Peter were running it, was Danny Lee the chef?
No.
He was prior. He was before that.
He was with the Harneys. He left with the Harneys. When the Harneys were there, when I was there, it was the center of town. It was the hub where, you know, that was the first place the Lakeville Journal was delivered on Wednesday night, and there'd be a line at the desk, and as I say, the ambulance ran out of there, and dispatching, and if there was a snowstorm, you know, people would go to the tap room to see who else got out. People would ski over there.
Mm-hmm. So it really was the community center of the town.
It was. And if you needed a wedding present, you'd get it at the country store.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And wedding receptions were done there.
Mm-hmm. Lots of them.
How many rooms did it have for overnight guests? Do you remember?
I think it had about 22. It had the main building, the motel that was built across the back, and then the house next door.
The
Gideon Smith.
Smith house.
Yes. That had four rooms. But we actually stayed in there when my parents were looking in the area.
Ah.
And then part of the downstairs was rented as a dress shop.
I remember that.
Dorothy's. And the cellar was rented to Polly Belcher. She had vintage clothes and some antiques. Holly's Closet.
Oh, yes. All right. I do remember that vaguely. Any memories that you want to share about either working at the White Hart or running the White Hart?
Working at the White Hart is what made me decide to go to hotel school.
Good.
Because it was so much fun. There was such a variety of things to do. I worked at the desk with Olive DuBois, that was her job out of high school. And when I knew her, she was in her 60s working there. It was amazing.
She pretty much ran it.
She did run one side of it, yeah. And, met lots of interesting people. I remember being at the desk when Lauren Bacall asked if she could make a phone call.
Ooh.
Because she had come up to see her son in a play at Salisbury School, where he went. And it was the center of town. And it worked. We had a regionally famous Chinese menu.
Oh, yes.
And we had this fabulous Viennese baker.
Mm-hmm.
And the waitress outfits were dirndls.
At the White Hart?
Yes, Swiss dirndls in the dining room. And in the tap room, they were cowboy shirts, red-checked cowboy shirts.
Oh, my!
So it's really a hodgepodge that just seemed to...
But it worked for the community.
To work, yeah. And the tap room had a buffet lunch.
The Rotary used to go there for the buffet lunch, and that would have been early 80s.
Well, the buffet lunch, Lila Nash was the town clerk, and she would go there every day for lunch and hold court in the tap room.
Okay.
Yes.
You have some wonderful memories.
Yes, I do. And there was, you know, the buffet lunch was a variety of salads that Bobby Day made.
Mm-hmm. I know Bobby.
Yep. And there's always some sort of roast and some sort of fascinating Chinese dish. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a chafing dish, yeah.
I have in my notes Ray Primal.
Ray Simo.
I'm sorry?
Simo.
Simo, okay.
He was the baker.
The Viennese baker?
We trained in Vienna, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. An inventor of the famous Scotty Burns cake.
Ah, what's a Scotty Burns cake?
Scotty Burns cake is a chocolate cake with chocolate buttercream and marzipan.
Ooh.
And it was named for the owner of the Stagecoach at that time.
Ah.
Stagecoach and Scotty Burns.
Yep.
And Ray made the cake, and people would drive for
miles
to eat that. It was amazing.
My goodness. All right. Anything else you want to add about the White Hart before we go on to early Harney tea?
Well, that sort of goes with the White Hart.
Okay. Yeah. Tell me about early Harney tea. Where did he train? Where did he learn his...
He learned from Stanley Mason, mm-hmm. who was a master tea blender who mm-hmm. lived in the Twin Lakes area.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time it was called Sarum Tea.
And it was located behind what is now the health food store, but was at that time Herrick Travel Agency. It was in the back, wasn't it?
No, it was in the cellar of the White Hart.
It was in the cellar of the White Hart, okay.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes if things were slow in the store or in the dining room, Mr. Harney would call somebody downstairs to pack boxes with tea bags or weigh tea for the loose tea boxes or glue labels on boxes. Or
Was he getting chests of tea at the White Hart or was he just packaging at the White Hart?
My guess is he was packaging there, but okay. I don't know for sure.
And... How many?
I was only on that end of it.
How many tea bags in a box?
100.
And where were they being sold to?
Mr. Harney went to Cornell and had a number of classmates who did very well.
Okay.
So he had an account at the Ritz.
Hmm?
The Beekman Arms was another.
Oh yes.
Classmate. I know he sold it at Bloomingdale's
because
I saw it there. So he had some...
He had contacts and he used them.
Mm-hmm.
Did he put out a catalog at that time?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But I don't know. I don't think so.
Because it's developed over the years.
Right.
It's changed.
And he wasn't the owner at that time.
No, no.
As I say, Stanley Mason was the tea blender, and I think Reese Harris kind of owned... That along with mm-hmm. White Hart.
He had his finger in a lot of pies.
Yeah.
All right, we move on to the Ragamont.
The Ragamont was a lovely place.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. When did you start there?
Working there?
Mm-hmm.
The summer I got married.
Which would be?
1983.
Ah, okay. And how long did you stay there?
Well, they're a seasonal mm-hmm. business, so I worked there that year. And then when we moved back to Salisbury in the early 1990s, I worked there for a few summers.
They were open, like, from May to October?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And who owned it when you were there?
The Schenkels.
And?
Rolf and Barbara Schenkel. And their daughter, Renee, also worked there. She became, I guess, the bookkeeper. And she also did all the ordering for the bar. And it was a real family affair.
Mm-hmm.
Alice Stefanisco was Barbara's sister. Barbara was one of 10 children. So... Alice and her husband had moved up to the area with their two daughters around the same time as my parents.
Ah, okay.
And Alice's husband died immediately.
Oof.
Which was awful. But so she started out waiting table there, and then it got interested in the cooking and eventually became Rolf's sous chef.
Sous chef.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of food did the Ragamot do?
Swiss German delicious food.
Did Rolf do the baking, or did he?
He did everything.
He did everything.
He did everything. Although he did tell me one time that, I guess in the 90s, he gave the recipe for his rolls to the baker at Shagroy.
Oh!
And so they could make the rolls for him if he didn't have time.
Good move.
They were really good rolls.
Yes, I remember. I remember.
And the salad dressing was to die for.
Yes.
It was just such good food. And such a pleasant atmosphere. When I first went there, when my family moved to the area, the inside was very 1950s and 60s, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. mustard-colored
yes.
wallpaper with cars on it. And
yeah.
things like
yeah.
that.
A little dated.
And I think Rolf worked through the winter every year to do upgrades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Until it finally became really attractive and
yes.
fresh looking.
And it was pleasant to dine. They had sort of an open air area
mm-hmm.
between the two sections.
Yes.
And it was a lovely spot because you could be outside, watch what was going on across the street.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any rivalry or competition between the Ragamont and the White Hart at that time?
I would say no.
Because
really.
There had been years past, but
I don't think it was ever acrimonious.
No.
That the White Hart, when I worked there under Mr. Harney, viewed the Interlaken as more of a rival than the Ragamont.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Ragamont was small and seasonal, and as I say, lots of relatives worked
yeah,
there.
They didn't rent rooms to Ragamont, did they?
Yeah, they did.
How mm-hmm. many rooms did they have there?
They didn't have that many rooms. Well, Barbara and Rolf lived in the barn in the back,
mm-hmm.
and they had two or three rooms there and a hot tub. They were more like motel rooms.
Yep.
And then the house had
5 or 6?
Yeah. They probably had 10 rooms altogether.
Because it was small.
Yeah.
It was small. Any memories of people, famous people, that came there or stayed there?
Mick Jagger came there.
Ooh, that's interesting.
And, you know, locals at Liberty's.
Mm-hmm.
I think I waited on Jane Curtin, Sandra Boynton, people like that.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to add about the Ragamont?
I miss it.
Oh, yeah, so do I.
Really miss it. We could walk up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was nice for special occasions.
It was. We had Mom's 60th and 65th birthdays there.
Ah, wonderful. Now, I'm going to go to Holly Williams' house, and I'm going to ask you first about how your mother got involved with the Holly Williams' house.
She was asked to be on the committee because she was the only one who was young and spry enough to go up the attic stairs.
Oh, yeah.
That is the story she told. So M. Rudd and Faith Campbell and who else was on that? Grace Reed and those people
mm-hmm.
were all in their 70s.
Late 70s, yeah.
And she was only in her 40s.
What year would this be?
1978, 79.
About right.
Yeah.
All right. And she gradually worked her way up to
Chairman! Yeah.
And I worked under her as a docent.
Yep.
What did she? Didn't she go off to museum school?
Yes, she did a lot of. She really did a good job running that place.
Yes, she did.
She took museum classes at Cooperstown.
Mm-hmm.
She also did some classes at Sturbridge. She had a very supportive president of the Salisbury Association that...
Who was president then?
Graham Davidson.
Oh, he would be.
That supported doing the best they could do with Holly Williams House. She also was on a lot of tour. She went to the Tri-State Tourism Council and Chamber of Commerce. She went to meetings in Hartford, run by the State Historical Society, and really
tried to promote it as much as possible.
Yeah, and see what other people were doing so they could combine with things.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the Holly Place, the restaurant, was in the knife factory. And so for a few years, there were bus tours where they'd come and do the museum and then have lunch, and that worked really well.
Uh-huh. Oh, I think I remember.
So they got people in there.
Yeah, I remember the bus tours.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And she also had a really good program with Salisbury Central School.
Yes, she did.
With the house where the
fourth grade teachers, that was part of their curriculum. And we did an 1860 lunch where the children had to prepare for themselves a lunch with no plastic lunch boxes and so forth. And that was extremely successful. And then we also did an evening at the Holly Williams where the children entertained their parents and passed out refreshments, and we made ribbon sandwiches. And it was a wonderful experience, both for the teachers to learn more about the house itself and the children to go back in time where they were in a different era and behaved themselves correctly, shall we say.
Yeah.
It was great fun. It really was.
Really understood it. And I remember her talking about when they studied the local history, there were some children who came from families in difficult circumstances and found out that their ancestors had been generals or something.
Yeah.
And that really made them feel good.
Yes, yes. Because the some of the people that are the old-timers in town came into town in positions of authority and great respect.
Right.
And things have changed over the time period, but the children were impressed with the fact that they had really important ancestors.
Yeah.
And this made them feel good.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which was very, very good. Lou had a great rapport with children, and she enjoyed coming in with her slideshows. She enjoyed working with children. And on my own little soapbox here, if you don't get the children involved, you don't go anywhere.
Right.
Is that how the Holly Williams summer camp developed, through her work with children?
I would say yes. When my dad died, Mom went back to school full time, so she stopped being the chairman at the Holly Williams house.
And when was that, Jane?
1989. But she still, you know, wanted it to be a going concern, and she was still on the committee. Well, I think when Nancy Rudd...
Yes, yes.
And then Nancy Bushnell took it over, they asked her to be on the committee, and she had this idea of doing a summer camp there.
What was her focus with the summer camp? Because it was rather unusual.
Her focus was what she called 19th century kids stuff. Mm-hmm. And it did a lot of things. First of all, the price, I did it with her, and we did not charge for our time, so that the fee for the camp was minimal because we wanted to make it available to anyone who wanted to go. We also had a student employee from the town,
yep.
14 and 15 year old.
Yeah, from the summer youth program.
Yeah. So that was good too.
Yes.
And So we, every day we did some sort of craft. Some mm-hmm. crafts took several days. Like we made checkerboards.
Yes.
And the kids could, you know, plan out the squares and paint them. Mm-hmm. And then they made the pieces. And, we also did a cooking yeah. project every day. We had a reading aloud period every day.
And the thing that I liked, because I worked a couple of summers with you and your mom,
mm-hmm.
is that there was no gender discrimination. If the boys right. wanted to cook, they could cook. If they wanted to sew, they could sew.
Right.
And it was no big deal.
Yeah.
You know, it was whatever you want to do, this is what we've got out there, just go do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the children, perhaps for the first time, were really allowed to do things that were not gender specific.
Right.
And they really enjoyed that. And one of my memories is we had, at that time, maybe we had four or five boys. And
my, it often was boy heavy.
Yeah. My husband came in and taught them sailor knots.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Which the boys really enjoyed learning something that was useful and practical and different.
Mm-hmm.
And Foster got a big kick out of it. The boys got a big kick out of it. And when your son and his best friends were in the Eagle Scout ceremony, I went over and introduced myself to one of the boys, not George, but one of the other boys. And he said, oh, I remember your husband. He taught me knots.
Yeah.
And so this had a perpetual carryover, which really pleased me a great deal, that Foster was remembered for the knots. And that it was something that came from the Holly Williams summer camp, which mm-hmm. was a great idea. About how many children would you have in a summer?
It varied a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We limited it to 12. Occasionally we had 12. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we had 5 or 6.
Yeah.
You know, it really
yeah.
depended.
Yeah. And how long did the camp run?
You signed up by the week. And depending on the sign-ups, I think a couple summers we did it for a long time, like
mm-hmm.
6 or 7 weeks. And then other summers, when we didn't have lots of people signing up, we did it for 3 weeks, or whatever worked.
And how many summers did it go
7
on?
Years.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
What were the hours from 9 to what?
Noon.
Nine
I think.
To noon.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no lunch or anything like that. That'd be like a snack.
We had a
or
snack. Yeah, yeah, we used to make. I remember Nick Sosin whipping cream because we had made shortcake.
Oh yes.
And he had never done that before, and he couldn't believe it. He said, "Oh, look, it's whipping!"
Oh, yes,
that's really
yes.
fun. And we made butter one time.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah. So they really had fun discovering
things,
what
yeah.
things that used to be just commonplace,
mm-hmm.
and they just didn't have any idea.
No. Way back when I was first teaching, I made candles,
mm-hmm.
and we did butter, and we did corn pudding, which, you know, surprised the children that these things would actually work.
Yeah.
You know, because they'd read about them, maybe, but actually works. Anything else you'd like to tell me about Holly Williams' house, your mother, or the camp?
Well, I miss the Holly Williams house too.
Oh yes, oh yes.
Hotchkiss is now doing a local history unit that mm-hmm. they call the Cemetery Project, because students are supposed to pick a stone in the Townhill Cemetery and create a story around the name of the person, because of course most of them you can't really research.
Mm. There's nothing.
Write a diary or a
yeah.
whatever. But it would be so helpful if they could go to a place like that and see how people lived and the kinds of tools they used.
A primary resource that they
exactly.
don't have anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah. So
I worked as a docent there for several years and enjoyed the people that I was working with, because
mm-hmm.
there was always two of us. and enjoyed the people that came because they would have different interests. Some would be interested in furniture, and some would be interested in paintings, and some would be interested in the families themselves. Mm-hmm. And it was a wonderful experience for everybody, I think.
Yeah.
And we really enjoyed it.
Mom was a great tour guide. She was the one who would open the bureau drawer and show people what was in there.
Yes.
Let them go behind the velvet cord
and that's
things like that.
That's important because that's what stands out. Mm-hmm. It's not just the rote tour.
Yes.
It's more than that.
Right.
The Holly Williams House also had a couple of flower shows that the garden club did.
Yes, they did. Uh-huh.
They were beautiful. They were well done. Let's go on to the Historic District. Now, what's that? You're on that committee.
Yes, the Historic District Commission has been in existence, I think, since about 1970. That's when the state of Connecticut decided that towns should have them. And they've set up guidelines mm-hmm. as to what types of properties should be in historic districts and what that actually means. So Mom was the head of that also for many, many years.
And you're on it now.
I'm on it now. Mm-hmm.
What does it actually do?
What it does is look for buildings or neighborhoods that have historical significance. And we try to get the owners on board with being designated as historic districts. What that means is, if you're in a historic district, you to make changes to the outside of your building, you need to go through an approval process above and beyond the
ordinary
PNC and building inspector.
So you couldn't take like the Dr. Noble House and paint it pink?
You could paint it pink.
You could paint it pink?
Yeah.
As long as you didn't change any of the outside structure?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
It doesn't have anything to do with paint.
Oh, all right.
But if you wanted to, for example, replace all the windows.
Ah, I see.
And maybe you just love picture windows. Your house is built in
1840
when they didn't have that.
If you wanted to take out the Palladian window in the front and put in a picture window, that would be a no-no.
Well, they would have to apply, and the historic district commissioners who have experience in, like we have had architects mm-hmm. on it, and we've had builders and people who have renovated buildings and people that have experience with the harmonious aesthetics, you know, keeping the feel of the building, feel of the area, would work with the person applying to do this.
I see.
And come up with some sort of good compromise so that the building was.
It wasn't.
So that it still had the feel about it. Okay. It's not that you can't do anything. It's that you work.
You
want to
keep the flavor and the ambiance.
Yeah.
How many are on the commission now?
I think we just got a new person. We have about 7 people. I don't know what the official number is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And what is the makeup? Are there real estate agents and architects, or are they just all lay people, or people that are connected with building?
There is a realtor, an estate planner, 2 realtors. An estate planner who has a lot of experience with developing real mm-hmm. estate, a builder. The new person has renovated. He was involved with the Holly Williams House renovations, mm-hmm. and now he's doing one at the end of Cobble Road.
Oh, yes. It used to be Heather Schofley's house.
Yes. Mm-hmm. They're doing that. So, as I say, even if... And then there's me, and I have a lot of
Historical knowledge.
Historical knowledge because of my parents and because I'm interested. So,
did you do the research? I know that your mother did a walking tour of Lakeville. Did you do the research on those buildings?
Some of it.
Yeah.
I did some of it.
I keep still trying to get that going again.
I know. We're trying to get the Hotchkiss class to do the walking tour to show how the village was.
Oh, that segues beautifully into Hotchkiss. Tell me about Hotchkiss as far as connected with your job as librarian and what Hotchkiss is doing to promote local history. You mentioned the cemetery project. You mentioned the Lakeville walking tour. Tell me some more about Hotchkiss. How about what do you do at Hotchkiss now?
I am a librarian at Hotchkiss, and I work with the English department and the humanities for freshmen. Prep humanities, they call it. And I also work with the cemetery project with Joan Baldwin.
How long has that been going on?
I think this year was the fourth year of that. But each year it gets better.
Yes.
We have a better handle on what the students need to do their project. And the students get very excited about it.
Yeah.
Once they, initially they don't really know how to approach it, but the more they discover about what was going on in the town, and this year we had an exhibit in the main hall of Hotchkiss of things from the Salisbury Association. Photographs, for example, of the knife factory and the workers there. There were some portraits and the big map of Salisbury with all the vignettes around the 1853 map.
Yep.
And the time period they're studying with that is the heyday of Salisbury, 1800 to 1870. So I tell them about the Roberts store. I showed them the picture of the sale that's happening. There's a big line of people. And
oh, sure.
Say, can you imagine this now?
Yeah. I
just can't.
Well, I remember when your father was head of the Board of Education, and we had a discussion at dinner one night that he thought the teachers should rotate every year or two. And I'd said, no, Henry, they've got to have at least 3 years to know your material. And it really takes about 3 years to get where you know where you're going, you know your material, and as you say with the cemetery project, it gets better every year because you know what works and what doesn't work. And it takes a while to come to that point. And it's not a one-year situation. It takes longer than that. It really does. And the people at the Holly Williams House that were docents, those of us that were there for more than 1 or 2 years, we got better because we would add to our knowledge from the people in the tour that would say, oh, well, I remember this when it used to be here or whatever. And you got better because you got more experience and you got more knowledge.
Right.
And that's so important with any kind of project that you're working with children because they need guidance. And if you aren't sure where you're going, they don't either.
Right.
Tell me about how you're trying to get the Lakeville walking tour going. Is this something that's...
Well, that would be part of this cemetery project where, in order to see how the village works, it's kind of interesting because Lakeville has gone from the place to go on the weekend to not really having a lot of things that appeal to high school age students. So they all go to Millerton instead. So when we try to talk about the layout of Lakeville, they don't know what we're talking about. Because they don't go there.
Of course not. They used to.
Yes, exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
They don't go, there's nothing there for them now.
But they used to go to the Holly Block. They used to go to the Jigger Shop. They used to go to what used to be the Borden's...
Yes, Myron Holly's bookshop and ice cream parlor.
Right, Right.
Yes, that was the store, the bookstore for Hotchkiss.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's nothing... When the drugstore was where the Chinese restaurant was, you could go and get an ice cream cone and a comic book. And,
yeah, but you can't do that
But there's
anymore.
Nothing...
No, nothing
there anymore. Left.
Anything else that Hotchkiss is doing to promote local?
Well, we're also in the prep humanities. We do an American Revolution unit at the end of the year that segues into the next year.
Mm-hmm.
And much...
Do you talk?
We try to make... At least, we try to make the region the center of what they're doing. The students are working with primary sources, so they're learning about the forges with the cannons. And
do you teach about the Iron Guard flag or Shay's Rebellion?
We don't get to Shay's Rebellion,
oh.
I think.
Do you...
But, yes, that's...
But you do get to the Iron Guard flag mm-hmm. and explain that.
Okay. So, it's... And there are other things. Soldiers that went from here, mm-hmm. what the town did to support them.
Mm-hmm.
The Hessians were marched through this
yep.
whole area. There are...
There's a lot here.
Yes.
If you can dig it out.
We actually were, you know, as important to the revolution as any place.
Well,
really.
the Salisbury Daughters of the American Revolution was called the Arsenal of the Revolution, and the Great Barrington, Massachusetts chapter that I belong to was called the First Resistance because we were the first resistance of the American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
So we are an important area.
Yeah, yeah. And General Knox brought the cannons through
mm-hmm.
Egremont.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I say, we sort of...
Regionalize it because
yeah,
there's a lot here to interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something else you'd like to add, or shall we bring this to a close?
We can close it if you want.
Thank you so much. It's been very entertaining. Thank you.
Good.